WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Virginia becomes the first state in the nation to adopt workplace standards to protect essential workers, including those in local poultry plants, against COVID-19. A federal agency's final report on the deadly helicopter crash in Charlottesville nearly 3 years ago blames a lack of training. And momentum seems to be building to keep local schools online this fall. This is the WMRA Daily for Thursday, July 16th. Governor Ralph Northam announced Wednesday that Virginia will be the first state in the nation to adopt emergency workplace safety standards in response to COVID-19. These new rules will protect essential workers, including those in the Shenandoah Valley's poultry plants. WMRA's Calvin Pinn reports.
Virginia's new COVID-era workplace standards to mitigate the virus's spread resulted from months of work from a statewide coalition to protect poultry workers. Harrisonburg activist Michael Snell Fikema has been heavily involved in that push.
If you can't be safe, if your health and your very life is in danger at work, that's a pretty bad situation. And you know, these standards have been created in order to address that situation. Not only for poultry workers, but for all the workers in the state.
Harrisonburg City Council issued a resolution in late June supporting those measures, as more than 335 poultry workers in the Shenandoah Valley have tested positive for COVID-19. Mandatory physical distancing, personal protective equipment, and transparency when an employee tests positive for the virus are among those new rules. They will be enforced based on complaints from workers, which were difficult to validate in the poultry plants without formal safety standards in place.
The governmental authorities have been completely dependent upon what the poultry companies have said they are doing. So that's why this is such an important step, is that this actually involves having someone come in and investigate to find out what's happening.
These temporary standards will be in place for 6 months and could potentially lead to permanent protections across different industries. For WMRA News, I'm Calvin Penn.
And here's Virginia Public Radio's Mallory Nopain. More on this story from Richmond.
Destiny Levere is with the labor union AFL-CIO. She says the standards set a precedent nationwide.
And this is going to help protect our communities and our families from this virus and get us on track to truly reopening the economy safely. And again, putting our workers at the forefront and protecting them.
Nicole Riley with the National Federation of Independent Business is fearful it could be a burden for businesses.
And we just are worried that for a lot of businesses who are doing the right thing, is the agency now going to be coming down hard on them if they, you know, missed something here or there?
The regulations are an emergency measure. Businesses that don't comply could face fines in the thousands. In Richmond, I'm Mallory Nopain.
Loss of control and a lack of training are to blame for a fatal helicopter crash in Charlottesville nearly 3 years ago, the National Transportation Safety Board said in its final report on the crash. The report issued Wednesday noted the pilot's loss of control after the helicopter had lost lift, as well as his lack of training in how to recognize such a problem and how to help the aircraft recover from it. The crash of the state police helicopter near Charlottesville on August 12, 2017, killed 48-year-old state police Lieutenant H.J. Cullen and 40-year-old trooper pilot Burke M.M. Bates. They were conducting surveillance of the Unite the Right rally that day. Liberty University filed a lawsuit against the New York Times, one of its reporters, and a photographer on Wednesday. The lawsuit claims the newspaper intentionally misrepresented the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on the Lynchburg College campus. The complaint said reporter Elizabeth Williamson and a photographer reported the school suffered a COVID-19 outbreak when it reopened after spring break and that nearly a dozen students were sick with the virus. The lawsuit claims the paper misrepresented a health official's job description and the information he provided. The school disputes that there was an outbreak. Albemarle County Schools Superintendent Matt Haas says he will present an online-only option for the school board to consider at the end of this month. A letter written by two Albemarle County teachers objecting to the division's reopening plans has garnered hundreds of signatures from division employees. The open letter calls for a virtual return to school. Charlottesville teachers have also advocated for all virtual classes this fall. In Richmond, Tuesday night, the school board voted 8-1 to reopen public schools virtually for the upcoming school year, at least for the first semester. That vote came after an overwhelming number of public comments from parents and teachers expressed ongoing concerns about the novel coronavirus and support for a fully virtual reopening. When courts reopened across Virginia, a wave of evictions flooded through them, and advocates have raised concerns about the possibility of some of them being unlawful. State lawmakers are working on ways to keep people in their homes. Yasmin Juma from Partner Station to VPM reports.
Following concerns about a lack of uniformity in the way Virginia courts are interpreting state and federal tenant protections, Attorney General Mark Herring released a report explaining all available measures. This came at the request of Newport News delegate Marcia Price.
There are a lot of ways in which the systems are not set up to help the person navigating the systems, and we've got to break that.
Price says renters and homeowners could use the report to better understand their rights. These include a new state law she sponsored, giving renters a 60-day grace period to catch up on their missed rent before having to face eviction proceedings. Qualifying Virginians have up to 3 months after the current state of emergency to request a 60-day delay from the courts.
Yasmin Juma from VPM reporting. The pandemic has exposed the vulnerability of some communities, but what happens when people are in more than one vulnerable group? Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
People who are Black and brown are more likely to be unemployed and uninsured, and people who are LGBTQ are also more likely to be unemployed and uninsured. So what happens to people whose identities intersect both of those groups? Freddie Mejia at the Commonwealth Institute says lawmakers could help this group by requiring medical training for cultural competency.
By implementing a process where medical professionals will continue having training and learning about their biases and learning about the different considerations needed for different backgrounds and people of different identities, it will only strengthen the outcomes that we're hoping to see here in Virginia.
In the short term, though, this is a group that could also be helped by paid sick leave. Delegate Paul Krizak is a Democrat from Fairfax County, and he says he's hopeful the upcoming special session will take action on this, passing a bill that was narrowly defeated at the end of the regular session earlier this year.
It's got a good shot, and it's really important. Any bill we pass during this special session would be the law in 90 days at the earliest. And so that's really good timing for the winter and when people really need sick leave.
The previous effort to require paid sick days died at the last minute because of the cost to Virginia in giving paid sick days to all state employees. Krizak says the cost could be offset some by limiting it to people who work 20 hours or more. I'm Michael Pope.
Coming up on Friday, the next installment of WMRA's special series Mental Health Matters explores more of this divide regarding mental health. Therapists and counselors say it's important for people of color to have access to counselors who understand their clients' experience. As therapist Darius Green says, some people of color don't want to have to retell every single aspect of their experience to a counselor. That's the focus of the next installment of WMRA's Mental Health Matters series, and it is coming up on Friday. Finally today, more than 130 museums, performing arts institutions, and historical sites in Virginia received a boost from Paycheck Protection Program loans, according to data released this month by the U.S. Treasury Department. Virginia Public Radio's Kat Maudlin Jackson took a look at how that money helped salvage a pandemic summer.
It seems like ages since the Richmond Symphony performed this rendition of Beethoven's Eroica in 2018. As Virginia tries to navigate a world with COVID-19, the musicians have kicked off a series of summer recitals paying tribute to the composer. But were it not for a PPP loan, that might not have been.
All bets would have been off, frankly, if we hadn't had the loan, because we would have been scrambling to find alternative ways of keeping the organization going.
David Fisk is the symphony's executive director. He says all paid positions were saved and no one was furloughed. Across the state, Roy Young leads the Montpelier Foundation, which memorializes James Madison and the people he enslaved on his plantation. Young says PPP funds made it possible for staff to stay on board and help the place-based organization adapt to the times.
We're now going to be a permanent hybrid site. So everything that we do will be on in a virtual format as well as on-site format.
Among the nonprofit cultural institutions in Virginia receiving government loans of more than $150,000, leaders of color were sparse. In Richmond, I'm Kat Maudlin Jackson.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Thursday.